Dylan here, guys. Thank you so much for checking out this chat with Jodie Taylor. I can honestly say firsthand, taking Jodie for some sessions, she's one of the most humble people I've ever met in my life. And her story is incredible, to say the least. I won't spoil it all for you. You're going to have to watch the whole video to hear more about her story. But pretty much her ability to be able to just push through any barriers and keep going because of her love for the game and because of her dedication to the game is pretty amazing. She's actually the first English woman to score a hat-trick too, so which is an unbelievable feat. And there's obviously some other amazing insights which you guys will find out in this interview. So enjoy it, guys. And so first of all, Joe, thank you so much for coming on. And like, how have you been? Like, how's isolation been? What have you been up to in Seattle?
Yeah, I've been all right given the circumstances. So the last time I saw you was just before heading back over to the States. So I was in LA for a couple of weeks training in the build up for preseason starting. And we got about 5 days into preseason before we got shut down. So Seattle and the state of Washington got hit quite hard with COVID-19 quite early on. So like we got shut down probably a few days before the league made the decision. And then from that, it's just been like, you know, it was like, oh, we'll see where we're at in a week, give it a couple of weeks. And then obviously as it's progressed, they keep putting the start date back. And as you can imagine, the US has been quite hard hit in general by COVID-19. So, I don't really know where it leaves us right now. Our club's been really good with communicating with us, like what's happening, updates, what they think's going to happen, but no one really knows what's going on with it and, you know, when we can start back up. No one has an idea really.
If all goes well, it might start then.
As of now, they've said pre-season will start back up May 11th and hopefully games at the end of June. Yeah. But it's difficult because like, the states are all in different stages. And then there's a federal guideline too, and the country is so big. So I think we may be able to start small group training by then. The games, I'm not sure, because I'm learning a lot more about the economy of football during this. And I guess for us to play, the revenue from clubs comes from fans, comes from them coming to the games, ticket sales, the concessions, merchandise, and I don't think we're going to be able to have fans anytime soon. So I think that might impact when we can start. So I think other leagues that have big broadcasting rights and get their income from TV deals, they'll probably be able to start sooner without fans. But our game relies on fans in the stands. And if we can't have fans until the same potentially August, September time. So, yeah. It's going to be, hopefully we can start training by then and we can maybe play some friendlies behind closed doors, but it just doesn't seem feasible for teams to have the season go ahead if we can't have fans, which is, you know, we don't think on that level. We just think, oh, as soon as we can start training, we're fine. But it doesn't work like that when clubs are trying to make money. It's a business for them.
Oh, of course, of course. Oh, that's crazy. And I guess like, obviously it's a super hard, not super hard for you, but like, how has it been, obviously, like, training by yourself and doing your fitness stuff by yourself? Obviously, know your wife, Emma, is stuck in New Zealand too. Like, how are you with that? Like, obviously, it can't be easy, you know?
Yeah, no, it's difficult. And that's it. We didn't know the time of how quickly COVID-19 escalated and just the travel. It's just not safe to travel. And I actually was considering coming over. Like, our club were really good with and transparent and said, look, we give you permission to leave if you want to leave. And Rosie White actually got on the next flight the next day, but there was really strict rules that were placed that even in that we got told we can leave, because I was actually debating trying to get a flight within the next few days, and they closed off the borders to anyone, to non-New Zealanders. So I haven't been able to come over anyway, and it probably is best that I stay here just because of the travel. I would have had to gone into quarantine and just getting back as well. It's been a bit of a whirlwind. It's been a bit crazy, but I don't know.
Thank you. A day at a time. That's all anyone can do. Right? Wow.
Yeah.
So how's your training been going and stuff? What has the club got you on? Do you just have to do sort of fitness stuff?
Yeah. So similar to what I was doing all off season in New Zealand, a lot of running, a bit of gym, We've been quite fortunate. They've changed the rules with the league. So initially we could use the gym. We could still get access to the gym in the field, but only in the gym two at a time and following the strict, you know, guidelines of making sure you're either wearing gloves or, you know, disinfecting everything as you use it. So that was working fine. And then the league said, nope, no one can use facilities with the club. So then we have to take the equipment and put it in our apartments, basically. So I've had a bit of a makeshift gym at home. But then it's the back and forth on what the rules are. And now we're back to being able to get in the gym in twos and sign up with like either your roommate or on your own. So I usually just go in when I'm on my own. So that's, at least I've been able to use the gym and, yeah, just following a running program that the club have given us. So very similar to what I was doing all summer in New Zealand, and it has felt like the never-ending off-season. As they change the rules, we can start doing more small group work. Right now I can work with another player and we're able to use the field and use like the mannequins and the goals at least. So I'm working with Jess Fishlock, who is a Welsh international player, and she's going to be a coach in the future, definitely. And she's been like putting on sessions, so I feel looked after in terms of that. But yeah, it's just depending on what you're allowed to do, what we can't do, and you just got to abide by the league rules.
Oh, wow. I guess it's, yeah, it'll be, obviously no one knows what's ahead, but I guess it's so cool that you are able to at least train with someone else too, and at least you guys can get your finishing reps and indoor that sort of stuff too, you know? Obviously, for all you guys who are on here and for everyone who watched it later, like when we had a few sessions, like the amount of, I'm pretty sure every single session before, after, you were doing your own running and stuff too. So guys, Jody, the preseason stuff, what she does is so tough. So having, how long, four months at least this preseason will be overall then for you?
Yeah, it started like December time. And again, the plan was have a true off season, because usually I'll go play in Australia in the off season from the US. And I thought, right, I need a true off season now, get my body in a good place to start pre-season early March, season starts in April, we've got the Olympics coming up, you know, just want to peak at the right time. And then you look at it and you're like, wow, I really wish I would have played in Australia now, would have cut down. now was my off season, but you aren't to know. And again, I just had to make decisions what were right for the circumstances. But obviously Olympics have been delayed a year, Euros have been delayed a year. And who knows when the season's going to start, but I just got to take it as it comes and just trying to improve physically and at least try and get the technical work in and work on things that I need to be better at.
Sorry, you froze there for a bit, but yeah, you're saying about technical. Sorry, Jones, I wanted to ask you too, obviously just to talk about your career just briefly. Obviously, Jodie's your international career has been awesome. You're the first England woman to score a hat-trick. Obviously, played in multiple World Cups, European Championships, Golden Boot in a European Championship too, and played for heaps of different top clubs, examples like Arsenal, both the Melbourne teams, a couple of clubs in the States, obviously with OL Reign. Is that the new name for them?
Yeah, so OL Lyon, who are arguably the best women's team in the world. The owners have now took over our club. And I think their goals are to be, you know, world domination and own some of the best teams in the world. So we're in good hands.
Yeah,
again, so, I'm excited for the season, whenever that will be.
So you're definitely at the right club, eh? So on it, just obviously we'd love to hear about your career in general, like how it all started and stuff. And obviously you've had 50 caps lately. You just got your 50th cap end of last year of England, and yeah, have got a great goal scoring return. Is it 20 goals you've scored?
I don't know, you know more than me.
Yeah, I think I've been doing my research. <Don't worry. laughs> But now, just tell us all about it. Obviously, we'd love to hear from the early days, you know?
Yeah, sure. So when I was growing up, not many girls were playing when I was younger. So my first memories were just playing with my dad in the backyard. So I've got a twin sister and two older sisters, and I think when me and my twin sister were born, my mum and dad weren't going to have any more kids, and it was four girls. So I think he just tried to take me and my twin sister to try and get us into playing football, because he liked to play football, and basically trying to turn us into the sons he's never had. So I really took to it at an early age, and my twin sister took her a few years she was too busy doing gymnastics and cartwheels in the backyard when I was actually wanting to play football. So yeah, started with my dad, and then at school I played with the boys a lot. So that we didn't really have a structured team. It was just kind of before school, after school, lunchtime, things like that. So I'd just be playing all the time and absolutely loved it. And then I was able to join the boys' school team. I must have been about 10 years old at the time. And they let me on the boys' team because no other girls played. And it was my last year of primary school. They kind of like rounded up some girls. We ended up getting a team and we entered into this competition, this local competition. And I always remember, like, I don't even know what I thought to expect, but we showed up to this field and there was just all these different girls teams. And I was just so amazed to see so many girls playing because I've only ever played with boys at school. And then our team are actually really good. We ended up winning this tournament, and they were Trammy Rovers Football in the Community who ran this tournament, and they were just out there trying to scout players for Trammy Rovers. And obviously at the time I just thought it was just a tournament, like didn't know there was a team or any like end goal with that. And then they came over and spoke to me and my dad at the end and asked if I'd want to join Trammy Rovers girls team. So starting year 7 of secondary school, I ended up playing for Tranmere, and I was with Tranmere all the way up until I was 18. So I worked through all the different age groups, under 12s, 14s, 16s. And then back then, it's just crazy to think now at where the women's game's at to where it was, because I got my first cap for the senior women's team for Tranmere when I was about 15 years old, which is just like not heard of anymore. Like, I mean, you have to be absolutely unbelievable to even get a chance, even at like age 17, 18. So, I mean, the game's come a long way, but for me, I had a really good opportunity at a young age to be playing with like the best players in England. So that's where, like, that was kind of my like teenage years. And then I made the decision to go to college in America when I was 18. There's a couple of reasons why I chose to go, but ultimately it was because in England it wasn't professional. The game, we only trained twice a week as a team. Like, that was quite standard. And obviously I knew someone who came back and was telling me all about it and how professional it was. It was full-time training and you get a free education, things like that. So it was something I was interested in. And then there was a girl who joined my club team who gave me the contact to where she went, and I got in touch with the coach, and just from there, I decided to go for it. And it was such a great opportunity. Like, it was the biggest culture shock of my life. Like, age 18, going from living in Liverpool to moving to this small college town, no mall. It was just a completely different world. But it was one of the best decisions I've ever made. And, I'm really glad that I did it at the time. And I think just from there, I ended up with the traveling bug. And that's probably why I played in all these different places, because I think that was the toughest thing, being away from family. And especially back then, not having FaceTime and stuff like that, it was actually quite hard to stay in touch with people. And that's why, like, right now, it makes it a bit easier being able to video call everyone, even though I'm alone. I don't feel alone. Whereas back then, it was difficult. So I think from getting through that and being there, and obviously just the professionalism of playing and improve physically, improve mentally, I'd say that the two biggest areas that is the US is so great at. And then I got my degree from there as well. So after there, it was no bother going to that country because I felt like I kind of did that at a young age.
Sorry, you're just lagging, but oh wow. And tell us about that's so cool for especially the girls to know that pathway to the US, you know, especially for the women's game, like, and then getting into your professional game. Like, so how did you do it? You break into sort of the official game then?
Yeah. So by the time I finished college, the game was still taking off. Like, there was pro leagues would come and go in America. It was quite unstable. They did have for a few years and then it would just, I don't know, fold, and then it'd come back and it'd fold. So it was really unstable in the US. And there was leagues in Europe, but they weren't professional. I wouldn't consider them professional anyway. Semi-pro, the league started. So at that stage, I thought, right, I don't want to leave America. but I want to keep playing. And I ended up having to make a decision to leave the US to go and play. And at the time, the English league took off, the WSL, and it was still semi-pro, I would say it was. But they changed to a summer league. They had more structure in place and started to get a bit more professional, train a little bit more. It really was the start of where they're at now with the league, which is fully professional. So I went back with hopes to try and make the national team. And I went in, they swapped from a winter league to a summer league. So there was this huge break. So I decided, oh, what am I going to do? I need to play. And then that's when I went and played in Australia. So it was only a 3 or 4 month season. So I was like, right, I'm going to go to Australia to play. Then I'm going to go back to England and play and try and get in the national team. So I went to Australia, and I've gone there quite a lot through my career during off seasons. It's worked out quite well to go kind of back and forth seasons. But that was my first year there. And I ended up getting injured. I hurt my Achilles. So I made the decision to not head home to England until my injury was right. So then I got back to England eventually. And it was funny because obviously I played at a young age when I was in England and I'd left to go to college. So this was about 5-6 years later. And only one or two coaches were around back then to what were there then. And so I remember speaking to clubs because I was like, okay, I want to go home. But none of them had heard of me, and like none of them were interested in signing me. So basically there was the Birmingham coach, Marcus Bignett. He played professionally, played for Birmingham, played for other teams. And he started like the women's team at Birmingham. And he remembered me and he's like, no, I want to sign you. So fortunately he believed in me. So I ended up going to Birmingham and I had a really successful year there. Did really, really well. Still didn't quite make the national team. So I made the decision to go play in Sweden after that because the game wasn't professional in England. And I went from a team that was semi-pro. We trained twice a week still. Had to do running and things on our own. To then a full, what we consider professional team in Sweden. And I wasn't earning much money at all either in England too. And I was relying a lot on my sister. I live with my sister. And yeah, just to be honest, I just wanted something a bit more professional. So I went to Sweden to play for Gothenburg, which was a step up back then. And that would have been 2013, that was. The Swedish league was really good. It was more developed than the English league. And so I went over there. Same thing, I had to prove myself. It was a good challenge. Then I started playing really well, scoring goals. And all this time, I thought, right, if I have a good few games, I'll get a chance at the national team. You know, the Olympics was 2012. I was in England, like, you know, quite naive to think, oh, it's 3-4 months out from the Olympics, but if I play well, I'll get picked. And it doesn't quite work like that. And being on the other side of it now, I totally see why I didn't get the chance. But I thought, okay, by the time I got to Sweden, I thought, right, I might get a chance here. And it was the 2013 Euros were in Sweden. So there's a lot of buzz around it when I was playing there. And I still didn't get a chance at the squad. And it was in the summer. And I had a lot of teammates who were playing for various countries at this Euros and a lot of the Swedish players. So I remember going to one of the games in the summer that was in Gothenburg. And I was just sitting in the stand watching. And for me, that was the turning point. Like, that was the moment where I'm sitting there and I'm like, I know I'm good enough to be here. Because I probably had a bit of like doubt and not as much self-belief because I wasn't getting picked. And you start doubting yourself and think, well, what, like, you know, maybe I'm not good enough. But it was that was the defining moment for me, just sitting there being like, I know I am good enough to be on, like, to be playing with these players on this like international stage. And that was a powerful moment. And the English team did not do well in that tournament. And the coach ended up getting the sack. And then the new manager came in. And then I actually got a call up. But by that time, so I'd finished out my season in Sweden, decided that I'm going to go back to Australia in the off season and play. So I was playing for Sydney and we had this tournament in Japan. We had all these makeup games. And when I got called back in for a camp, it wasn't a FIFA date, and I'm sure if I would have pushed it, I would have been able to go. But just with everything that had happened, I was like, I just won't go. But then obviously I didn't get a call up for another 6 or 7 months. I'm like, oh my God, this is never going to happen. But then after that, so after Sweden, again, the opportunity came up to go back to America. So they started a pro league that year, 2013. And I was debating between America and Sweden. But I decided on Sweden. But then after that, I knew I wanted to get back to America. So that was the plan. It was to go play for Sydney in Australia. So Sweden, go play for Sydney in Australia, and then play in the US League. So I ended up signing for Washington Spirit in the NWSL. So that was for 2014. So again, I was hoping for this call-up to come again. I just kept not getting picked. And I knew I was getting a bit closer and closer, but I just focused on club. So I had a decent, successful year, I'd say, for Washington Spirit, my first year in the league. Again, took a month or two to, you know, get used to the pace of the game and adapt. And then I was having quite a good season, and then I ended up getting a call in. So I got my first cap for England. It was August, end of July. It was like July or August 2014 was my first cap. And it was just less than a year out from the 2015 World Cup. So as soon as I got a call in, I started my first game, and he threw me in the deep end, really. I think it was just like, right, let's just see how you handle it. And I think we beat Sweden like 3 or 4-0. I didn't score, but we played well. It was a good win. And then ever since then, I had been in the squad. I didn't get dropped at any point, and it took me a few camps just to get confidence. And like, I remember there was one game I literally missed the sitter. I just couldn't believe it. Like, at club I would have put that away no problem, and I think I was just nervous and ended up missing it. And anyway, so at that point I had about 8 months or so until the World Cup, and that was just the goal, was to just get picked for this World Cup squad. So I had an off season. I was in New Zealand for the off season. Then I had changed teams. So it's funny, it's like I'd kind of bounced around teams a little bit. And a lot of it was because it's like I knew the level I wanted to play at and what I was capable of. But it was always hard to get the opportunity without being a national team player, I found. So, you know, it was a pattern that I was finding during this time. It's like a time for a club, not on a very good contract. And then they're always like, oh, you're better than what we thought you'd be, you know, because you're not a national team player. And so basically I felt like I had to kind of work my way up to get onto a top team. And I went to college in Oregon State, and absolutely loved Portland. I went to Portland all the time. That was like the big city. And when the opportunity came up to go play for Portland Thorns, I was like, I this is my dream club. Like, I really want to play there. And, you know, they play in front of 15,000 fans, the women. Now it's even more, it's like 20,000. Like, it's incredible, absolutely incredible. So I got the opportunity to go there, so I signed for them. But then we got into pre-season, pre-season went really well. I was getting picked for England, so I was flying back for that. And I think it was two or three games into the season, it was about 8 weeks before the World Cup, I got injured, got a knee injury, and I tore my meniscus. At this stage, I was like, I couldn't believe it. And I remember the England doctor telling me, I was like, I've hurt my meniscus, I'm going to have to get surgery. And he's like, don't get surgery. Hang on, we need to see the scans. So I was speaking with him, and he basically said, if you get surgery, we're trying to do everything we can, because if you get surgery, it's an 8 to 12 week injury, and we don't know if you'll make the World Cup. But in the end, you know, they figured out I needed the surgery. Like, there's nothing I couldn't have played through it. So they got the surgery. And I was just adamant. I was like, I haven't come this far. Like, I am going to that World Cup. So basically, I had the surgery. And then they flew me home. And I was in St. George's Park for pretty much a month straight, working full-time with a physio. And it was really touch and go. Would I make it? Would I not? And the coach at the time, Mark Sampson, he believed in me and took a chance, and I was selected for the World Cup, even if they didn't know if I'd make it back in time or not. So it really was a race against the clock this whole time. And the team flew out to Canada. I met up with them a little later because I needed the extra week to rehab. So I got out to Canada, and I ended up getting my first minutes in the group stages. So we played Colombia in the third game and we had to win to make it through, and I think we were already 2 or 3 nil up. So I got on for 10 minutes. So that was just amazing to even get on. So it's like, right, okay, I've got 10 minutes in me now. And literally, it got hard with it. So we were literally heading into the third game. I hadn't even played and wasn't sure if I would even play. I just didn't know, but it was just amazing being there. So I played 10 minutes in that game. Then we got into the round of 16. So we got out of the group. That was Norway. And we were losing, or we were drawing. We were losing, and I was about to come on for 20 minutes. We got the equaliser, and then I came on, and then we ended up scoring, so we beat them. So I was like, oh, that's amazing. We're going into the quarterfinals now. So I was like, great. I played about 25 minutes, 30 minutes. So then the next round was the quarterfinals, and that was against Canada, host nation. And we'd never won a quarterfinal match in our history of the national team. So then we about to see what the lineup was, the formation, everything. And my name was on the board in the lineup. And I was like, what? I thought, right, this tournament at best, I'll just be an impact player. So I couldn't believe I was starting this match. So then get to the game in Vancouver, BC Place. It was like 50 odd thousand Canadian fans. It was probably the best game I've ever played in. It was just insane, the number of fans there, and they're all supporting Canada. And I scored the first goal. So the defender, been watching clips on her, and anyway, I knew that if I pressed her, she might give up the ball. I ended up pressing her, gave me the ball, and then I just dribbled and scored. It was incredible. The stadium just went silent. That was such an amazing moment. We went 2-0 up, went to 2-1, and then ended up playing the whole 90 minutes. Don't know how I lasted through it, but we won the quarterfinal match and ended up making it through to the semi-final. So it was history made, insane. And then we ended up playing Japan in the semis, and we ended up going out on the last kick of the game. We scored an own goal. Just a brutal way to get knocked out of the tournament. And then we ended up going on to beat Germany in the bronze medal match and come away with it in bronze. So that was just incredible. That whole journey of not even knowing if I was gonna go injury wise, and then being able to play. And then the semi-final I played, but I had to come off. And then the last game, they said I wasn't fit to play because of my knee, for the health and wellness. So it was one of those moments where it was still disappointing because I knew I could have done so much more in that tournament. But again, still just to be a part of it was incredible. So after that, I got back to club and just my knee was just wrecked that whole time. And then off the back of that, I ended up getting another Achilles injury, and I just decided to come home to England to play and just get my body looked after properly. And again, the Euros was 2 years out at this stage. So I signed for Arsenal, played in England for a while, got my body right, and then we were heading into the Euros. And that was the tournament where I ended up getting the golden boot. And again, we got knocked out in the semi-finals. So there's three major tournaments we've been at, we've all been knocked out at the semi-finals, which is quite tough. But yeah, the Euros was awesome. The first game against Scotland, I was nervous for it. I was just I just hope I play well. And then I ended up scoring a hat trick, and we won the game 6-0, 5-0, 6-0, whatever it was. So I've had some good memories, and I was 28 when I got my first cap for England. And at times I definitely thought it was over or not going to happen, but I've had some great memories since coming late to the party.
Honestly, that's so cool, Jodes. Yeah, I remember I was hoping you were going to say that, because I was going to mention if not that, especially resilience for all the young players. 1920, they're I don't know if I'm going to be at level, or I don't know if I'm going to crack it. But for you to be able to push through, and as you said, it was hard for you to get those good contracts early in the days, but to push through in 28 to have your first cap and get 50 caps and have an amazing international career, so cool.
Yeah, no, it was mad. And I think I'm just glad that I stuck with it. And sometimes I had to just believe in myself, but I was fortunate to have good coaches along the way that believed in me. Like I said, the coach at Birmingham who believed in me and knew me from the past, and you know, there wasn't many coaches back then that even knew who I was. And so there's definitely been key coaches and significant people along the way that's really helped that, especially the national team coach Mark, who seen something in me and stuck with me even with injuries and things like that, you know. So it's definitely helped having coaches that value you. And but I'm glad that I stuck with it, because I think that's one thing I've learned is things change so quickly, coaches change so quickly, and circumstances change, and you just can't predict the future. So I just focused on me and what was in my control. And I still do that now. It's all about what you can do yourself and control the controllables.
Everything else takes care of itself, doesn't it? That is so cool. Awesome, Joe. What I'll do is you've given us such a good breakdown of your career and stuff. And by the way, after this, guys, you have to make sure you look up Jody's hat-trick versus Scotland, because it's a great hat-trick. And there's a cheeky chip in there too, eh? Training, Jody still loves a chip too, guys. That's a go-to. So what I'll do is I'll hand you over to Olivia first of all. So for you guys who are asking questions, just say your name, say like maybe where you're from, what club you play for. It should be all Kiwis other than one. A few Kiwis from a few different places. So just let Nodi Jody know a little bit about yourself. She doesn't bite, I promise. Ask her whatever you guys like, and go for it. So Olivia will be first. So Olivia, you're unmuted. Yep.
Hi, I'm Olivia.
Hi, Olivia.
I'm from Auckland, New Zealand, but I've got full Dutch heritage, so my goal is to play for the Dutch national team one day.
Oh, nice. Not New Zealand, not the football fans.
Yeah, my Dutch family are like, go on, you can do it. But I've just got a question about pathways for football. Do you think pursuing football through UK universities is an effective way to like go far, like, or to start off?
UK universities, I don't know much about the university setup. I think a problem that the pathway in England, an issue with it right now, and what they're trying to change, I know at least, is that playing at a high level doesn't really coincide with study. So you know how in the US, you've got the college system of you get your education and you're playing at a really high level.
Yeah.
In the UK, it's not necessarily like that. And with scholarships and the opportunities, the US system presents, UK doesn't have that. And the issue that we've had in England over the last few years is a lot of our English youth players have gone over to college and to play in America, which says a lot, I think. Yeah. Because again, they want to pursue playing at the highest level and also get an education. It just hasn't really worked out in England. And I know they've obviously, look, we must have over 20 players of our youth national team players playing in the US, which to our youth system is a problem. So I think they're looking at trying to change a few things with how they can support players and still play at a high level. Because I think right now, playing at a university in England isn't a very high level.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's all I know on that right now.
Cool.
But I know they are looking to try and change that.
Yeah. Because I've had a year-long injury myself. Did you find it hard to, like, cope with, like, the frustrations and stuff? Or did you just, I mean, I'm fully focused on achieving what I want to achieve, but did you find that you were kind of, like, doubted along the way, like, through your journey through the injury?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Honestly, injuries I've found have been probably one of the hardest challenges that I've faced in my career. When I had an Achilles injury. Well, actually, I'll go back to, I left this out before. When I was 16, I had a really bad leg break. And I was a youth national team player. I played for the under 16s and then I got moved up. Actually, I was under 17s and then I got moved up an age group under 19. So I was doing really well. And I broke my leg and I just didn't have the support. Like, I just kind of like fell off the face of the earth basically. And kind of left to it myself. And unfortunately, my club looked after me, and you know, they bent over backwards for me to help get me back from injury. I was really fortunate that they helped me, but I kind of, yeah, I felt a bit alone with that. And that was part of the reason why I went to America, because I thought, well, I was all national team through and through. And then I just felt like I got kicked to the curb. So I was like, right, okay, well, I need to start thinking what's best for me. So that, I mean, that started at a young age, my mindset with that. Then when I had my Achilles injury, that was a really tough time. And it is, because you're not able to do what you love doing anymore. So not only that, it's your passion, it's my job, it's everything. I just couldn't do it. And you know, I think one thing that I've learned now is to just, for me, to try and not stress through the injury, and just trust the process and trust that you'll get back after rehab. And that was probably my hardest thing. So I just wanted to be out there, and then, you know, worrying about, will I get back? Like, will I still keep my spot on the national team? And, you know, all these things are going on. And yeah, I just think taking each day as it comes, get through the injury, trust the process. I think that's the main thing. Trust the process that you will get back, and just believe in yourself. Because even I was still struggling with my Achilles. Like I said, I moved back to England before the Euros. And it was about 6 weeks out, 6 or 7 weeks before this European tournament where I ended up winning Golden Boot. I was still struggling with my Achilles. My friend from Australia came over to watch my last, it was my last club game for Arsenal that I played. And she's like, you're not running properly. Like, you know, you look like you're hobbling. I'm like, well, I am hobbling. But again, you just trust the process, and you got to just trust the people that are working with you and the experts with it, and just have that belief that when your injury is right, you'll be ready.
Awesome. Cool. Thank you.
All right.
I mean, I've looked up to you since like ages ago, so an honor to talk to you.
Thank you. And you say you're based in Auckland?
Yeah, based in Auckland, yeah.
We'll have to do a session next time I'm over. Hopefully COVID-19 settles down and I'll be there next summer. So, yeah, it'll be cool.
Yeah. Look forward to that. Awesome.
Thanks so much, Olivia. Unbelievable questions. I'll get another Aucklander, Jodes. This is Shantae. So introduce yourself, Shantae.
Hi. I'm Shantae. I'm from Auckland as well. And I play for Buttons Beach. And my question was, what advice would you give to yourself if you were 16 again?
Oh, these are good questions. Okay. These have done well. Advice I'd give to 16-year-old Jodie. Say, just enjoy it, I think. I think that's one thing I look back through, again, the injuries or tough times or not getting picked for teams, you know, think like challenges along the way, not getting so wrapped up in it, and just enjoy it. Because there's times when you get so stressed out and worried that I'm not making the most of it. So I'd say enjoy it first and foremost, and just work hard and give your hardest. I think that, you know, there's sometimes when I've been really nervous in games through my career, not knowing if I'm good enough or if I'm going to play well. But I would always remind myself, just work hard, because that's one thing that you can control. Like, no one can take that away from you. If you're nervous, or you question if you're good enough, or, you know, you don't know if you'll score that goal, or if you'll execute that right. But one thing that you can always control is how hard you work. And for me, that always got me through times when I was really nervous or doubting myself, is just control what you can control.
Cool. How do you deal with the disappointments in your football career?
Yeah, it's hard not to get wrapped up in it, and hard not to get upset by some things, because you care so much, and like, you love playing. I love football, and obviously you want to play all the time and not be injured or not get picked and things like that. I think it goes back to controlling what I can control. I think just going back to, like, right, what is it within my power that I can do right now? And again, it comes down to, you can always control your work rate, control what you do in yourself, and the extra sessions that you do, the extra ball work, the watching games, You know, are you looking after yourself? Are you eating well? Are you getting to sleep early? You know, just all these things, like, no matter what, whether I was playing really well or I was injured or not doing so well, there's always things you can go back to and hang your hat on that no one can take that away from you. And I think for me, that's really powerful, and it's been really powerful through my career, is control what you can control and focus on those things.
Cool. Thank you. That's all my questions.
Okay.
Shante, unbelievable questions again. Well done. And next one is, I'll get Amelia. And Amelia, I believe, Jode, is from somewhere quite near you. So I'll let Amelia take it away.
Okay.
My name's Amelia. I'm from Seattle.
Oh, my cool.
My first question is, how do you bounce back after a mistake in a game?
How to bounce back. Guys, your questions have been unbelievable. You know, that's one of the hardest things to do, I must say. Like, when you know, say for instance, I've just missed an open goal, right? And you're so disappointed in myself. And the key is, like, not hanging on to that. Like, you've just got to let it go. But it's so hard. There's been games where all I've thought about is, I should have scored that goal. Why didn't I score that goal? But then the reality is, there's nothing you can do about it. It's gone. You know, there's no point in worrying about it and then missing another goal because you're too worried about missing the last one. So I always find when I make a mistake or miss a shot, normally I'm like straight away, I'm like, well, I hit that over the bar because, you know what, I didn't execute it properly. I leant back and that's why it went over the bar. So then it's like, right, okay, this is why that happened. I'm going to make sure it doesn't happen again. But it's one of the hardest things to do. Even to this day, and I've played a lot of games and a lot of training sessions, it's still very hard to let those things go. But I usually take a deep breath because, like, sometimes you're worked up and stressed and worried, and it's like, take a big deep breath and just, like, it's gone. Nothing I can do about it now. I'll just focus on the next one.
Okay. My next question is, what was the most important thing you did when you were young to become a great player today?
I think, honestly, I just loved playing soccer. Like, I just absolutely loved it. And, you know, no one could take that away from you. Like, yeah, like I said, when I was younger, I never knew that women's football was a profession. And I never, in my wildest dreams, did I think I'd be playing professional when I was older. But I always wanted to. Like, I remember my grandma, when I was younger, asking me and my twin sister, like, what do you want to do when you grow up? And I said, oh, I want to play for Liverpool. And for me, I just wanted to play for Liverpool men because there wasn't a women's team that I knew of. But I always wanted that, and I always had that dream. So I think that's what, for me, ever since I was young, I just enjoyed and loved playing so much that I think that's ultimately how I got to where I am now, along with working hard, obviously. But I think they're the main things. I feel like I keep repeating myself, but enjoy yourself, have fun, work hard, and control what you can control. I think they're the three key things for me.
Okay, thank you. That's all I have. Yeah.
Okay. Nice to meet you.
Yeah, you too.
I've been working with you. I'm sure as soon as all the stuff's over, Amelia will be at one of your games, Jodes.
Oh yeah, you have to reach out for sure. I can get you some tickets, no problem.
Okay.
Awesome. Love you, Amelia. And the last one is Raphael from Queenstown. Raphael, mate, you can take it away.
Hi, I'm Raphael from Queenstown, obviously lower part of New Zealand. And one of my questions is there any type of main quote you've lived your life by or your football career by?
Good question. There's definitely been quotes along the way. I think right now, not off the top of my head, I have a quote, but I'll have to dig one out and I'll pass it through to Dylan, because I remember there being one or two quotes, especially a couple of years ago, that really got me through, like, injuries and kept me motivated. But I'll just make my own one up. Have fun, work hard, and control your controllables.
Thank you. My next question is, this is just one about your own personal. What team did you enjoy playing for the most?
Oh, these are absolute bangers. You know, I've enjoyed most teams that I've played on for different reasons. If I had to pick one, I'll give a few because I think Birmingham, because that was a real test coming from playing college in America, taking a bit of a break, no one really knowing who I am. And that was like, right, I need to make a good impression in England to make the national team. And I think I did that coming back to England that time. So I think playing at Birmingham was a really good experience. Sweden was as well. I'd put them two together. And then obviously the club that I'm playing for right now, OL Reign. This is my third season with the club, and it's the long outside of playing college and when I was younger playing for Tranmere, it's the longest that I've spent at a club, so they must be doing something right. So I really enjoy playing with the players here. I get to play with Megan Rapinoe. If you have heard of Megan Rapinoe, I'm sure you all have.
Yes.
So I get to play with some great players here, really well looked after, and I enjoy it. So yeah, I've been quite fortunate. I have enjoyed a lot of the clubs I've played for. Melbourne City as well was awesome, and winning the championship with them. So yeah, every club I've played for, there's definitely been a highlight. But that'd be the main ones.
Okay. What was I going to say? Yes. Is there a specific player you looked up to when you were young for a reason?
Yeah, so growing up, I had a few role model players, but they were all male players because they didn't know of any females. So I loved Michael Owen because I'm a Liverpool supporter. And Michael
Same
Owen
here,
was
so,
top, yeah. Top player. So I loved Michael Owen, and then I loved Thierry Henry. They were the main ones growing up. But then in the women's game, Kelly Smith was a huge English player who was brilliant. I'd heard of Mia Hamm back in the day, and she was a big name in the US. But then probably over the last 10 years, Christine Sinclair, I've always admired as a player. So when I played at college, she was a few years older, and I thought she was incredible. So I've always loved watching midfielders forwards. I should say the only midfielder that I've ever liked is Steven Gerrard, again, for obvious reasons.
Yes, of course.
Yeah, so all forwards, and yeah, Christine Sinclair, unbelievable player, great person as well. So I've really admired her as a player, and I'm so glad that for you guys who might not know, she broke the all-time goal scoring record in women's football, international football. So amazing achievement, and couldn't have been more deserved.
Thank you.
Love your work, Raphael, mate. Awesome questions too. Jodes, I was going to be fair, I've got like about 5 or 6 questions here to ask you too. However, they've already been asked because all you guys have done a great job. But I've got a few other things I wanted to ask you about. But I'll just put it into one question pretty much. So obviously, we've had a little chat about you joining the FIFA Pro Global Players Council. And obviously you want to, and I really wanted to know in regards to like your role in that and where you'd, like from what we've talked about, the difference in women's football in the last 5, 10, and like 20 years, it's unbelievable how far it has come. What would you like to see women's football be like in 20 years or 10 years time? Like, I'd just love to know how you see your role in that and how you'd like to be a part of that, I guess.
Yeah, no, it is interesting. Like, obviously I've started from the bottom, from where women's football was when I was growing up to where it is now. Like I said, I just in your wildest dreams you wouldn't have thought it'd come so far, but with that said, it's still got such a further way to go. There's still so much more that could be done to make it similar to where the men's game's at now. We're so far behind men's football, so as much as things have progressed significantly over the years, we can still keep pushing forward. And I think for me, I'd love to see globally, I'd love to see that happen. Like, obviously we see in the US it's in a great place, like England's getting better, Europe's getting better, but you know, New Zealand doesn't have a professional league, or you know, the Aussie league's only for 3 months of the year. So I think globally the game could be in a much better place, and I think just pushing basic work conditions. So with the FIFPro Global Player Council, a huge part of that is being a voice and using the platform on behalf of all players. And I think the biggest thing is just those basic work conditions being met globally, because I think some places do and other places don't. So I think, yeah, if you think the next 5, 10, 15 years, I'd love to see most countries similar to the men have professional leagues, and our players getting opportunities to do it as a career. Because the reality is a lot of players drop out in the 20s. Even in the US, a lot of players are dropping out in the 20s because it's just not sustainable. They're not, you know, they're earning lower than minimum wage. They're having to make a lot of sacrifices. They're not getting the right opportunities. So they choose another profession. And it's a shame because you lose out on so much talent. So, like I said, it's in a great place, and there's some great people working in football, pushing the game forward. And we just can't hang our hats on thinking, oh, well, it's professional now. It's in a good place. Like, there's still so much more that could be done. We could be watching, you know, there could be more on TV. Yeah, I don't think that in terms of like sponsorship and just kind of it being out there, the coverage is just not as good as what it could be either. And I think, you know, national team and international tournaments, major tournaments are really, that's where the platform is for women's football. It's not like for clubs in the men's, it's the Premier League, it's Champions League, you know, the coverage worldwide and the standard's very good. Whereas in women's football, I think only really World Cups and maybe European Championships and major tournaments, Olympics perhaps, are actually shown globally and on a world stage. And I'd love to see club football get there for women's football.
Yeah, oh, that's so awesome. And I think, obviously, you being a part of it is a big thing. And I think they're obviously very lucky to have you a part of the organisation. And I'm personally really, really excited to see how you guys do go in the coming years, you know. And obviously, obviously the Olympics is next year, and then the Euros have been pushed out another year, haven't they?
Yes, they have, yeah. Yeah, it's all been pushed back a year, which obviously as players were disappointed about, because we just want to play, but it was definitely the right decision. Like, there's no way the Olympics could be going ahead this year. And then the men's Euros got pushed back from this year as well. It was supposed to be this summer. So they had to push back a year, which then obviously with the Olympics and a men's Euros going on that summer, ours had to get pushed back as well. So it was the right decision. Disappointing because you just want to play and you want to play now, but you just got to respect what's going on in the world and just get on with it.
Exactly. Football comes second at the moment, eh? But honestly, Joe, like, you are such a legend. Like, having a few sessions with you and training with you, like, I think you're so humble, and I think it's so awesome for you to give up your time to talk to these players. And I'll make sure to put a cool YouTube video up with all these questions and to learn more about your story, because I think there's lots we all can take from it. And especially the big thing is, for any girls out there who like you were at a young age and maybe didn't break into like the national team that early, or are thinking about 18, 19, 20 and giving up football, like, I feel like your story really shows that if you push through it and keep loving the game, keep enjoying it, like, anything is possible, you know?
Yeah, that would be my biggest take-home message, is don't give up. Don't let someone else tell you if you can and can't achieve your dreams, you know? So don't give up, believe in yourself, work hard, have fun. You've got it.
You're an absolute legend, and I hopefully look forward to
Sorry, you cut out. What did you say?
Sorry. I was saying thank you so much again. I was saying I hope to look forward to catching up with you in the off-season time. So,
yes, definitely.
January.
For sure. I'd love to.
No, that'd be awesome. That'd be, you're a legend, Jodie. Thank you so much. I'll be in touch, all right? Thanks so much for coming along, guys. Amazing questions.
Thanks, guys. Look after yourselves. Be safe. Take care. Bye. See ya.